C plus 20. 10 Downing Street, London, England. Of all the political missteps, of all the political embarrassments, and of all the unsalvageable political situations, there had been none like this. John Cole had seen a lot, and Jack Neal had seen a lot more, but neither had seen an outlook as bleak as this one. Cole knew that he couldn't reasonably blame Jack for what had happened. It had been his own idea to run with an accidental reveal, and Jack had openly expressed his own reservations so strongly that Cole had initially agreed to put a pin in it, and this only served to amplify his regret. At the precise moment Chairman Godfrey expelled the United Kingdom from the GSC, John Cole's position as Prime Minister became untenable. That the expulsion came shortly before a series of simultaneous official announcements which disclosed the existence of Comet Conte Abate made the whole debacle even harder for Cole to take. For while concerned Americans tuned in to hear President Slater and equally concerned Chinese citizens hung on Ding Xiong's every word, tens of millions of Britons tuned in to see not their elected leader, but his predecessor, Godfrey. Cole was furious and embarrassed at how things had played out, and the morning's general public mood did nothing to lift his own. A new spin on the familiar Cole dog political caricature had already been shared online a record number of times. The cartoon showed Jack Neal lying mauled by his out-of-control attack dog, and much of the world flattened as the rabid and slobbering beast rampaged around the globe in pursuit of a giant sausage which hung down from an approaching comet. There wasn't a particularly deep or incisive meaning behind the sketch, but it covered the main bases. Another pair of well-known and less family-friendly political caricatures, first seen in a four-page comic strip titled Arse Cole and Jackass, were also given a fresh lease of life in the aftermath of Cole's public embarrassment. In this image, an extremely overweight and unkempt version of Cole sat atop a tired and scrawny donkey with Jack Neal's face. Cole struck the pose of a deviant flasher, sporting a menacing grin as he held open a long overcoat to reveal rolls of paper with the word Comet scrawled in huge letters on every line. The opinion pages of the morning's newspapers contained more serious criticisms of Cole's transparent and reckless politicking. Some commentators understood why the Comet's approach had been kept under wraps, while others harbored a degree of anger at the world's governments for keeping the truth hidden. But even from those angry at the secrecy, Cole received not so much as a word of praise or thanks. After all, rather than bravely break rank to deliver a message he felt the citizens of Earth deserved to hear, he had presented the revelation as an accident. The newspaper's front pages, meanwhile, both reflected and perpetuated the main reaction of terror among the general population. These front pages were plastered with understandably alarmist headlines and vivid artists' impressions of catastrophic impacts and some of the expected results. Mocked-up tsunamis lent themselves particularly well to this kind of thing. In political circles, the calls for Cole to resign were already deafening, with both rivals and colleagues insisting that he should save himself the embarrassment of a vote of no confidence and go now. This was no soon-to-pass social media firestorm like the kind Cole was used to riding out. The scathing words of his former allies were far from hollow, as evidenced by the fact that several of his ministers had already resigned, and that all of the obvious replacements had already ruled out the prospect of ever joining a cabinet led by Cole. By mid-morning, it was readily apparent that even the most publicly seeking of career-minded climbers knew that seizing this particular opportunity would do them more harm than good. Even the long-standing ministers who refused to resign out of principle issued statements and gave interviews to decisively distance themselves from the Prime Minister, who now found himself with no support from any angle. Party donors wanted him out, the party membership wanted him out, the opposition wanted him out, the public wanted him out, and most painfully, even the handful of colleagues he had considered close allies now wanted him out. To make matters worse, the blood drones, which had embarrassed William Godfrey so much a year earlier, had returned to Downing Street overnight and left their mark in the form of a giant red X in the middle of the street. Cole didn't care what the X was supposed to mean, that he was a target, that he was finished, or whatever else the idiots were trying to say. And unlike those tasked with keeping him safe, he didn't even particularly care about the alarming breach of Downing Street security. Cole cared only about what such an affront signified. That, like Godfrey's back then, his position was no longer respected. Cole had at least avoided the ignominy faced by Jack Neal some 20 minutes before his arrival, when one of several eggs thrown towards him from a distance hit him square in the face as he stepped into a car. For all the man's occasional spinelessness, Cole felt that Jack deserved better than that. Partly for that reason, and partly because no one else in the world was still bound to his own political hip, he had decided he would go easy on him. But when Jack arrived, he looked anything but humiliated. "What the hell are you so happy about?" Cole asked. Jack lifted his phone from his pocket. "Good news, boss. It's about Trey Myers." Upon hearing this, Cole's glum demeanor quickly lifted. "Go on." "He called Emma," Jack said, his hand hovering over a play button on the phone's screen. "I have a full recording of Trey's side of the conversation, and I think you're going to want to hear what they were talking about."